Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archived programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, Ridgewood Care Center will have their annual craft fair on Saturday, November 12th from 10 to 2. The event offers works to local crafters and Ridgewood residents. All proceeds benefit the Resident Outing Fund. Ridgewood is located at 3205 Wood Road, Racine.
Support for classical music on WGTD comes from Piasecki Althaus. Honoring personal legacies and the circle of life, allow the compassionate, caring staff at Piasecki Althaus to take care of your funeral needs. Serving the community since 1931.
24/7 Jazz HD2 is now available on your smartphone. For jazz, big band, and blues, go to the App Store and download the free WGTD app. HD2 is still available on your desktop at WGTD.org and in the Kenosha Racine area on your HD radio.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, Charles Portis' classic novel True Grit is this fall's big read throughout the Gateway Technical College District, which includes Kenosha, Racine, and Walworth counties. For a list of events, visit neabigread.org. This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, WGTD Walworth County correspondent Jim McClure, and by Marlo Harmon, a lifelong Racine resident who's currently employed as an addiction counselor at Racine Correctional Institution. And now, here's today's host.
Hello, listeners. This is Marlo Harmon, your host for today's Community Matters at 91.1 HD WGTD. And today we are finishing up a kind of a dual segment with regards to the race for district attorney that is going to be vacated this fall by Rich Chiappetti. And we've already spoken with Patricia Hansen, who provided us a lovely conversation with regards to her perspective on her run. And today we have going to have a conversation with Tom Binger, who's of Caledonia. He's running as the Democrat seat for the position. He's worked as a prosecutor or business and civil lawyer for over 19 years, and currently he works at the Kenosha County District Attorney's Office. And today is actually his 2-year anniversary for that.
That is correct, yes.
And he also said something about bringing donuts.
It's a little tradition in our office. When people have big events, we bring in donuts. And I brought them in from a local bakery, Oliver's Bakery. My 4-year-old son is named Oliver, so it has a special Aww. Place in my heart. And the office appreciated it. And I had a couple myself. So,
well, I know I would have appreciated it. I like donuts and bakery items in the morning.
They're a little stale by now. But
so it is a pleasure to have you here. I really appreciate you taking out the time to kind of come and talk with us. There's a lot of things that I want to talk about.
That's great. I don't
even know if that we'll be able to hit on a lot of them, but I am interested in kind of knowing some things that are going to really, I think, improve just the overall safety in Racine. I think that some of that paired with the position that and the duties of the district attorney in Racine, I think will be good. One of the things that really is of interest right now is the media is promoting and there's a big interest in the Black Lives Matter. I guess my first question is that concept. Do you believe that? Do you believe that concept that Black Lives Matter?
Well, first, let me say thank you for having me on, Marlo, and I appreciate the opportunity to sit down and discuss these issues. The district attorney's office is a very important one. It is mm-hmm. one that maybe a lot of folks don't understand what we do. We are the chief prosecutor representing the state of Wisconsin yes. and overseeing the criminal prosecutions in Racine County. Yeah. So we have a big influence on the community. And this is a race that's a very important one. The election day is November 8th, same time as the presidential election. And I hope that people listening to this will learn more about the candidates, learn more about the importance of this race, and pay attention, because this does make a difference in people's lives. And you've touched on part of it with the Black Lives Matter movement, which is a movement that I believe in, mm-hmm. And that I agree with. And I was reading something recently that talked about the linguistic distinction between Black Lives Matter, and some people want to compare that to All Lives Matter.
Right.
And this is something that people think we're saying two separate things when we say that.
I agree.
And I don't see it that way. I think Black Lives Matter is designed to draw attention to a very important issue that I think is one that is often overlooked, and that is that there are disparities in the way the criminal justice system treats minorities.
Most definitely.
And it's not
especially
just
in Wisconsin.
True. And it's not just African Americans. It's minorities of other ethnic groups, Latinos, for example, even folks of lesbian, gay, bisexual, you know, transsexual orientation as
and
well.
That is true. But
but to hitch on the topic that I think you're really aiming at is
okay.
We do have these issues of racial disparity. We have people, and I certainly sympathize with them, that see our system as being harsh on African Americans. Mm-hmm. And so we've got these incidents all around the country that get in the news, even as close as Milwaukee, mm-hmm. of officers, oftentimes white officers, who are using violence against often unarmed black suspects, black defendants. And there have been a lot of incidents of individuals who've been shot and killed by police around the country.
And I think that actually the concept of the Black Lives Matter, I think the root of it is saying that we need to develop some relationships that are going to be better, mm-hmm. Better in our communities, people, especially among people of color, and African Americans in general, because as far as incarcerations, we are number one. We are number one in the nation as far as Wisconsin incarcerating African Americans beyond the national average. And so when it's the concept of Black Lives Matter, I think is how do we work with individuals? How do we work with the main entities, whether it's police officers, whether it's prosecutors, whether it is public defenders? How do African Americans work with those type of entities so that we aren't, there isn't a disparity, whether it's being shot unarmed or whether it's being incarcerated or whether having longer probationary periods even through with public defenders? So how do you work with that concept as a DA to make sure that the disparity is decreased and that there is some more balance?
And I understand what you're saying, and I've seen it myself, because I'm a white person, and I drive around the town in all parts of the town, and I've had situations where I've been stopped. For example, a few years ago I was driving and I had not renewed my plates by the expiration date. And so, you know, my month is last month, and now I'm supposed to get the new tags. And I haven't done it yet, oversight. And I got pulled over for it. And in that situation, the officer went back, looked at my record, whatever, and let me off with a warning. And, of course, I immediately got it fixed. It was an intentional violation. But I have seen in my work as a prosecutor, both in Kenosha, and I was also prosecutor up in Milwaukee for several years. Mm-hmm. And I have seen the exact same situation with somebody who then gets a ticket. Mm-hmm. There are other violations that may be cited at that time. There's a search of the vehicle. You know, there are things that are done that are much more intrusive than someone in my position has experienced. And I think that's ultimately what a lot of people have difficulty understanding, and why there's this gap in how people perceive this, is because for me, as a white person, I can't pretend to understand what it's like to be someone who is, as they say, driving while black, and, you know, is stopped for a ticky-tacky violation, and then it becomes a search.
And that's kind of understandable as far as, not being able to actually put yourself in the shoes, because you can't. But within the job that you will do, and looking at the numbers,
sure.
and understanding that something has to be off, and to with that information, setting in steps and setting in protocols to address that. I think that that's kind of something that I'm kind of just more interested in, kind of understanding what would you do for Racine in the position of district attorney, and what are some of the things?
One of the things that I believe strongly in is community-oriented prosecution. Okay. This is something that they're using up in Milwaukee, where they have district attorneys who are based at each one of the district police stations around the city full-time, and they're working with the residents of that neighborhood to identify problems, to work with them to try and solve these problems, and to develop that working relationship. And there are community police stations around Racine, but the prosecutors are all up in the ninth floor of the courthouse, and they don't come down, they don't go out to those cop shops, they don't talk to our community. And ultimately, I think we need to restore faith in our criminal justice system. We need to restore faith in police. We need to restore faith in the district attorney's office. And one of the things that motivated me to run for this office is the legal problems that our current DA had a couple of years ago when he was cited for OWI and for obstructing an officer. And that tarnished the reputation of our district attorney's office. And we need to work to restore that. And one of the things that I have promoted throughout my campaign is what I call justice with integrity, which is something that I believe in. It's restoring that faith in the district attorney's office, and people can have pride in the office. They can have confidence in the office. They know there's transparency, there's accountability, and they know that the office is going to fight for justice but is going to do it with integrity. So specifically to what you're talking about, addressing this issue of racial disparity, I think it begins with restoring that faith and restoring the lines of communication. So during my campaign, I have already held three listening sessions around the community. I did one at the Bray Center in downtown Racine. I did one out in Burlington. And I just did one last month in Mount Pleasant. And I'm going to do a couple more here before the campaign ends. And I invite people to come to these listening sessions and talk about criminal justice issues.
And for those individuals who may not necessarily be able to attend those meetings and get some information on your background, I'm sure some of these listeners will be listening, just because, an educated voter is one of the best voters.
Yep.
You've talked about looking at some type of restoration of the faith with individuals in the criminal justice system and kind of relationships with law enforcement. And one thing that could potentially kind of restore the faith in the system, if there was a little bit more fair and balanced decisions that were going on. So I'm kind of interested in what are some of your thoughts about, prosecuting low-level offenses like possession of small amounts of marijuana for a repeat offender, because many times when there is a prosecution of something that small for someone, it can prevent jobs, it can prevent other opportunities that can better themselves, and then we have a cycle of just kind of people in incarcerated and things like that. What's your thoughts with regards to that?
Racine City Ordinance 66-261 decriminalizes possession of small amounts of marijuana. Basically, what it says is if you've got less than 25 grams of marijuana, you're going to get an ordinance. You're going to get a ticket. And I think we need – the winds of change nationwide are blowing on marijuana. I expect that within the next 5 to 10 years, we're probably going to have legal marijuana here in some form. I personally do not feel strongly about – marijuana possession or marijuana use. I think the ordinance is well intended to take the low-level possession cases and move them out of our criminal justice system. So in terms of possession or use of marijuana, that is not going to be a priority for me. And that's something that I think a lot of folks, especially in the African-American community, find that that's something that they get prosecuted for. It's something that police go for and things
Most
like
definitely.
That. And that's, I think, why the ordinance is in place. And I think that needs to be followed by the Racine Police Department. And I think generally countywide, it's a good idea to kind of draw a line there and say, if you've got a lower amount, we're not going to worry about that.
Do you think that those same type of efforts and steps will be taken then for the individuals that are in possession of heroin? Because Racine County has had an increase with regards to the heroin epidemic, and it doesn't seem like the steps that are being taken, making sure that police are trained to inject Vivitrol and have that available for individuals that may overdose. But as far as ticketing and the same criminal process that is applied typically for individuals with small amounts of marijuana, you get a ticket. They aren't being applied fairly for individuals with a different addiction. And those populations are different. One is, as you said, more typically African-American in the marijuana usage. And with heroin epidemics, I am a drug counselor. I kind of work for the state of Wisconsin. I know the statistics. It's typically the Caucasian youth that is being drawn into the heroin epidemic. But the charges and the way that situation is treated is differently. And we know that one is given addiction and treatment court options, and another is given tickets, and hardly anyone of color is participating in the treatment court situation. So I'm interested in knowing, how will your decisions with regards to ticketing marijuana small amounts compare to providing tickets for individuals that are caught with heroin but have overdosed?
And you mentioned Vivitrol. I'm a strong proponent of Vivitrol. Now, we have officers who are equipped with Narcan, which is the drug that they give to somebody in the middle of an overdose to revive them. Vivitrol is a drug that we're using to great success in Kenosha County. And what it is it's a once-a-month injectable drug that can be given to someone who's got a heroin or opiate addiction. And it literally goes to the part of their brain that is stimulated by those opiates, and it fills it in so that they don't crave the drug anymore. So what we're launching in Kenosha County, and this is something I want to bring to Racine County, is we are taking folks that are found in possession of heroin, who are nonviolent offenders, first-time offenders, that sort of thing, and we're diverting them before they even get criminal charges into a program where they can get Vivitrol and treatment. And if they're compliant with that over a period of time, then we don't pursue charges against them. Now, you distinguish that from marijuana gets a ticket, you know, et cetera.
Correct.
I would disagree with you in terms of the severity of these two offenses. Possession of heroin is a felony.
Mm-hmm.
Just simple possession. You can go to prison. Possession of marijuana, first offense, is a low-level misdemeanor. As I said, oftentimes it's handled by an ordinance where you get a ticket and a fine. It's not on your criminal record. You don't have to put it on a job application, et cetera. But generally speaking, users of drugs should be given the opportunity to participate in a drug court, drug treatment program, and should be given the opportunity to be diverted out of the criminal justice system.
I agree.
This is something that I believe very strongly in, is we should be focusing our resources on the dealers who are bringing the poison into our community, not on the users who are struggling with an addiction. Racine County does not have unlimited resources. We need to make some choices here on where we're allocating our tax dollars. And what we've seen with drug court treatment programs, and Racine's program, I've talked to a lot of people about this. The DA's office right now is the gatekeeper, and they are closing that gate to a lot of people. That's something that I want to change. I want to open it up so more people can get into that, regardless of their color, regardless of their background. Racine's lagging behind in these types of programs, not just in drug
Most
court,
definitely.
But
we don't even have
a behavioral health court. We don't have a mental health court here in Racine County. We've had one in Kenosha for years.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at a seminar back in May with prosecutors from around the state, and I learned and heard from them, you know, Eau Claire County, Outagamie County, Brown County. Some of these counties are way ahead of us in terms of what they're doing. And what they're seeing is these programs are paying for themselves. Not only are they getting people the help they need, which gets them back on their feet, gets them back into the workforce, productive members of society, but it reduces recidivism, so they're not committing future crimes.
Correct.
And they pay for themselves. These programs, they've seen, for every dollar they put in, they get $2 back. So Racine County, like I said, we don't have unlimited resources here. We need to expand these programs, and it's not happening. under the current DA's office. You know, my opponent has announced some sort of program where she's going to try and give a break to first-time marijuana users. Well, the ordinance already says that.
Mm-hmm.
And I know people, and I had a Facebook discussion with somebody recently who was complaining that everybody's focused on heroin, and this person suggested that that was a, you know, a suburbs issue, a white person's issue, and suddenly all of our assets are going towards that, and we're leaving the other drugs behind that affect other ethnic groups.
Or treating them differently, the offenders differently.
The one thing I would say to that is people are dying of heroin. You know, we don't have people dying from marijuana use. We don't have people dying from crack cocaine use nearly at the rates.
Well,
we do have some, but we're talking once a week.
And we understand certain, some of this is, you know, marijuana is
a gateway
drug to other things.
Well,
that's
overstated.
But I get it.
The people who are addicted to heroin and opiates are dying in our community right now. Every week we are losing somebody here in Racine County. And that is an epidemic. It's a public health crisis. And we would be remiss if we didn't devote our attention to that. It's far more than gun violence. It's far more than traffic fatalities. You know, this is our number one cause of accidental death here in Racine County. We've got to focus our attention on that.
So, heroin?
It is. And nationwide. It is affecting everyone everywhere. And it's not just the deaths.
I was going to say, now, I think alcohol beats it out, but...
gaining fast. Alcohol might have been steady since the Prohibition.
Yeah.
But this stuff is this is number one with a bullet. This stuff is coming up fast.
Okay.
But you know, the other thing is, it's not just people overdosing and dying. It's all the other collateral crime that comes along with heroin and opiate addiction, because a large percentage of the burglaries, the robberies, the thefts are addicts trying to find the money to buy their next hit. And it's cocaine addicts, it's marijuana addicts.
But it's
a lot of addicts who are addicted to heroin and opiates, and they're committing crimes. So we have victims out there. We have people, you know, who are running a convenience store who get robbed. We have family members whose, you know, their prized possessions get taken.
Correct.
We have employers who are having their stuff taken. So it's not only affecting the users. And, you know, some people might say, well, if somebody chooses to use that drug and they overdose, you know, that was their choice.
And
but
your
we
involvement
have a societal issue here, too.
And your involvement with it seems to have started even in your current position and what you're doing right now. So some of the things that you're interested in Racine improving on, you're saying that are some of the things that you are already interested in doing and participating in and kind of expanding on.
We're lagging behind in Racine under the current district attorney's office. And my opponent is the deputy in that office. She's been part of that management team for 4 years. If she wanted to do this stuff, she's had plenty of time to do it. Now, right in the thick of an election season, to suddenly jump on this bandwagon kind of seems disingenuous to me.
What are some of the other things that you think that you would like to implement within your first 6 months in,
No. That's, you know, I talked earlier about the community prosecution program. I think that's critical. And I mentioned the listening sessions that I've been doing. But what I'm really focused on with this program is the district attorney's office, as it's currently set up, is totally reactive.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is that a crime occurs, the police go out, they arrest somebody, a family gets torn apart, somebody gets put in jail, and it comes to the DA's office. And only then do we have an opportunity to do something. And by then, the damage has been done. We have an ethical obligation as prosecutors to get out in front of these things and help the community solve problems before a crime occurs and before a family gets torn apart. So my goal with the community prosecution program is to get out there in the community, Racine, Mount Pleasant, Sturtevant, Union Grove, Burlington, Waterford, Caledonia, everywhere, and meet with these folks and talk about the issues that are facing in their community, because one size doesn't fit all, and get to know those issues, work with the local folks in that community. It's the clergy, it's the educational leaders, it's the community leaders, it's community organizations, nonprofits, things like that, and see what we can do to help fix these problems before a crime occurs. So, for example, like I said, in Kenosha, we've got a program where we're working with people who are addicted to heroin and opiates to try and get them on Vivitrol, which is something I've been championing all throughout my campaign. We don't have anything like that here in Racine. Get them out of the criminal justice system. Try and repair that family. Don't label them, you know, possession of heroin is a felony, right? So you get convicted of that, you're a felon. It goes on your record. Okay. You can't have a firearm the rest of your life. It's going to be really hard to get a job someday. And, you know, as I mentioned, a lot of these folks commit property crimes, theft, robbery, burglaries. If we put them in prison, they're not going to be able to pay restitution. I want to make that victim whole. I don't just want to make the offender whole.
Correct,
I want
to
make
and
the victim
that has
whole
something
too.
To do with your original thought on talking about the ethical obligation of just making sure that things kind of, you're proactive in your steps.
Proactive is the key.
And
we're not right now.
We have talked about, and we have talked about the heroin epidemic, but I really think that that is a small issue of the bigger problem that is going on in Wisconsin and Racine. Just period. The incarceration rate, if we are looking to make our streets safer, it doesn't seem like it's happening by the statistics, because we are catching more people and we are and having more people locked up. And so kind of talk to me, what do you think is the reason, or some of the, you talked about the processes and the steps that have to be made before charges are made and ultimately convictions are done. But right now we still have an issue with mass incarceration of African-American men, the highest in Wisconsin. Why, I mean, in the nation, Wisconsin is. Why do you think, if we are talking about, and we really do have district attorneys that are following the philosophy of ethical obligations before anything increases and become more risky, why do we have this issue?
Every day, I get the opportunity to review police reports about a crime and decide whether or not to prepare a criminal complaint and actually charge somebody with a crime. That's one of my duties as a prosecutor.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll get a file. It'll have somebody's name on it, and it'll have reports that indicate that usually the night before, because we get them right away, and we have to process them within a certain period of time, and it'll have the reports indicating what happened. Maybe it's a domestic violence. Maybe it's a drug case. Maybe it's something more serious.
All right.
Who knows? I can tell you that in all my years as a prosecutor, I've never once looked at the race of the person.
And that is good. And I think Tricia said the exact same thing on any of the information. Race may be on there, but it's not what you are looking at. And yet and still, African-American population is minimum in comparison to the overall state of Wisconsin versus the population that is incarcerated. That can't be
right.
Statistically.
we have a lot of societal things that contribute to that, that are beyond the power of the DA's office to fix. We have schools that aren't preparing people for life. We have communities and cultures that don't have good structures in them to help folks. We have a lack of a father role in a lot of households. We have disincentives to get gainful employment and incentives to do other things with your life. So there are a lot of things, and that's just a short thumbnail list of them. As far as the district attorney's office is concerned, what I see our role in that, as I said, is colorblind to start with. But I think we can also help with the front end and the back end. So on the front end, you have, as I alluded to earlier,
okay,
you know, when I'm driving around and I get pulled over for not, you know, renewing my plates in a timely manner, I get treated differently. Educating the police and establishing that dialogue, establishing that trust, and putting them in a position where they're not treating someone differently than me. I shouldn't be treated differently than anybody else. If my tags
Correct.
Are expired, I should get a ticket just like anybody else. If you're going to search a car, search my car too. You're not going to find anything other than my, you know, kids' toys and, you know, crackers that they haven't eaten all over their car seat. It's a mess. But you want to do that? Do it to everybody, right? So that's on the front end, and that's
right.
Education. That's something that the district attorney's office can foster. On the back end, when somebody's convicted of a crime, the district attorney's office has a very important role in terms of what sort of sentence they should receive. Mm-hmm. And that's a role that we take very seriously. So I think we can take into account some of these factors. And, for example, when somebody's convicted of a felony, we get what's called a pre-sentence report, which is usually about a 15-page document prepared by the Department of Corrections that tries to lay out the biography of this offender and their educational background, their employment history, their drug abuse history, their criminal background, their family, things like that. Talks to the victim of the crime. And we get that, and it gives us a lot of information as to that person's background. So, for example, I had somebody in court today who we were prosecuting for fleeing an officer, mm-hmm. But it was a felony, and this person had a significant prior record which consisted of some rather frightening domestic violence and even sexual assault type behavior. But what I didn't know until I read that pre-sentence report is that this person had been in themselves a victim of sexual assault when they were very young, like the 5 to 9 year old time frame. Okay. And what we've learned over the years is these adverse childhood experiences play a huge role in a person's adulthood. And what I mean by that is if you are a child who's the victim of child abuse or sexual abuse or trauma, that sort of things, the cycle can repeat itself. So if you grow up in a household where you see your parents physically fighting with one another, you may be likely to physically assault somebody that you're in a relationship with later on in life. So one of the things that I want to do, for example, as a district attorney is we have all too often cases of domestic violence, and I'm generalizing here, but it's oftentimes a man physically assaulting a woman.
Okay.
They may be married, they may be boyfriend, girlfriend, and we have to make an arrest. The police have to make an arrest in that situation. It's mandatory, and they oftentimes take the male out of the household. And all too often, we then have the victim come to the police station the next day or a week later and recant. And they say,
so what do you want to do to make
it didn't happen.
Make changes.
You know, he didn't mean it, whatever.
Okay.
And I've struggled with why does that happen?
All right.
And what occurs to me is that when you disrupt that household and you don't give them any help to repair themselves, that they want to restore that balance. They want to restore that normality. So, for example, up in Milwaukee, they've got a Sojourner Truth facility with something like 70 beds where they take these victims and they provide them wraparound services. So they take care of the kids. There's education. There's medical. There's AODA. There's clergy, et cetera.
And Tom, I think that.
So that
and I think
that
all
loss
of that is
not
good.
Felt.
But I'm
trying to respond
to your
point.
Relationships,
I'm not off topic. Because
well,
what I'm really trying
except
to say
that
is,
I think all of what you're trying to say is that ultimately relationships will help, period.
Well,
whether it's relationship, you have to have some type of better understanding and develop better relationships, understand kind of how it would affect victims and how it affects witnesses and working together with the various entities to make it so that we can all get a safer and just overall reduce crime ultimately, hopefully.
And
that's
not
what you're saying.
And I'm not just
because
looking.
Because my next question is, what I do believe the relationships are important. And if you are elected and you get in the position, how does your current relationship with some of the judges, hopefully in Racine County, if it's an interest of you to be in this, what's your relationship like with the 10 judges that are currently on bench? And how do you think that's going to help you in getting some of the things that you hope to change in the first 6 months done?
I've been in Kenosha as a prosecutor for 2 years, but before that I was an attorney here in Racine for 9 years.
Okay.
And I was with a business law firm doing business litigation. I didn't do any criminal defense or divorce or personal injury. It was largely contracts, real estate, employment law, that sort of thing. And during that period of time, I got to know the Racine Bar and the judges and the courthouse quite well.
Okay.
So I was on the board of governors of the Racine Bar Association. In fact, just before I got here now, I was at a Racine Bar Association event where all the judges were there. And it was one of our annual meetings, and it was a nice event to see some folks that I don't get to see very often because I'm practicing down in Kenosha.
Okay.
But I know all of the Racine judges, not just the current ones, but I know the ones You know, Judge Patak, for example, is stepping down soon.
Yes.
Judge Merrick recently stepped down. Judge Simonic just recently stepped down. Judge Jude. So I know all of them quite well, and I've practiced in front of them. I've done trials in front of them.
Okay.
And I think that I have earned their respect, at least I hope so. And I think that when if I'm elected and if I take this office, that I will have earned the respect to bring some of these changes. And this kind of gets back to one of the things I alluded to earlier, which is what happened with our current DA really tarnished the image of the DA's mm-hmm. office. And I've said this to a lot of police officers I've met. You know, if you did that exact same thing, you'd be fired.
A lot of people feel that way.
No question about it.
Because
as a police officer, you have to be trustworthy. And,
exactly.
And one of your jobs is to come into court and testify under oath and
yes.
tell the truth.
Yes.
And if you've lied in the past, and we've got proof of it, no jury's ever going to believe you.
Right.
The district attorney has to have that same trustworthiness, that same integrity, to earn that same respect, has to have that same transparency and accountability.
Absolutely.
And we don't have that right now. And honestly, I have some questions regarding my opponent as to what happened in that situation, because as the number two person, she had an obligation to bring in a special prosecutor to review whether or not Rich Schipetta should have been charged criminally for what
okay.
he did. I have prosecuted people who've lied to police. That's a Class A misdemeanor. You can
mm-hmm.
go to jail for up to 9 months and face a $10,000 fine.
And he did get charged with?
He got a ticket. He didn't get a state criminal charge.
Yes.
And the person who makes the decision on the state criminal charge is the district attorney. Well, our office here in Racine County was not going to be in a position to make that decision because they had a conflict of interest. So what do? You should bring in a special prosecutor from outside the county. Walworth, Kenosha, Milwaukee, Waukesha, neighboring county, and make that decision.
Right.
And the person who should have made the call there
you
was my opponent.
Yes.
And she didn't do that.
Okay.
And that's, again, part of the situation here we've got is, you know, I think we need to bring somebody outside who doesn't have ties to the way things are currently done, who can look at things from top to bottom and reevaluate whether the things we're doing are appropriate or whether or not we need to make some changes in here. I can't promise that the judges are going to buy into everything, and we have to work together because this affects the way the courts are organized, the way the caseloads are handled, and things like that. But I'm going to work with them, and I'm going to push hard for the things that I believe in. And I think I've got the credibility, and I think I've got the respectability to accomplish these things.
How well do you work with the police department, the sheriff department, with regards to making decisions, especially and sentencing and things like that? And how will you continue that in Racine?
I work right now with police and sheriffs on a regular basis, and I think I've got a good working relationship with them. I think I've earned their respect. I think they know that I'll go to bat for them when they've got a case that they believe strongly in. But what we're seeing around the country is that there has to be some distance, some dealings with the police that can't be too cozy, because there may be a time when we are the ones in the district attorney's office who may have to prosecute a police officer. You know, we just had this happen in Kenosha. We had a police officer who planted evidence and was fired and was prosecuted for it. So I think we have to be careful not to be so closely intertwined that the public loses confidence in the district attorney's office and our ability to be impartial
mm-hmm.
and fair and unbiased in these situations.
Okay.
I'm not afraid to tell the police that they're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I've done this. I had a case recently where the police stopped somebody who had a weapon in their car, and so they're prosecuting them because they were a convicted felon.
Okay.
But the reason that the police stopped that person was frankly just not believable. It was they had come up to a stop sign. They allegedly hadn't turned their turn signal on more than 100 feet away from the stop sign. And I thought to myself, yeah, I don't think I've ever turned my turn signal on more than 100 feet from the stop sign. And they came up behind another car at the stop sign. That car had stopped and then pulled forward and turned. And then this car sort of pulled up, did a little bit of a rolling stop. And this was all on video, so I could see it.
Mm-hmm.
Did a little bit of a rolling stop and then proceeded. And that was the reason that the police pulled him over. And I said, no, it's not going to – I do that every day. You don't pull me over, right?
Right.
I mean, we all have to be held to the same standard.
Yeah.
So I'm not afraid to tell the police that I think they've made a mistake. I met with Chief Art Howell recently
okay.
And talked to him a little bit about the campaign and about the relationships. And, he brought up something that I found very interesting. He talked to me about some of the burglaries that the police investigate here in Racine. Okay. And then they refer them over to the DA's office, and he doesn't get a lot of good information about what happens to them after that. Sometimes the DA's office goes forward on the case. Sometimes they decide not to. And it becomes kind of a black hole. He was concerned. Like, I send these over there, and I don't hear back. What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
And what I said to him, and I think this is a good policy, is when the district attorney's office makes a decision not to file charges, particularly in a felony case, in the more serious cases, I think we should call the detective in the police department or the sheriff's department and tell him why.
Okay.
And that's valuable for a lot of reasons. Number one is it answers the chief's question, what happened to my case? But number two, if there's something wrong that we can fix the next time around, we can do a better job of policing, we can learn from this, and we can improve our practices, that's the dialogue we need to have. So if there's something wrong with the stop, if there's something wrong with the search, if there's something wrong with the case, we as DAs have an obligation to tell the police and guide them and help them. Let's do it right the next time. Because we all want the police to do a good job. Everybody wants that. You know, you see the We Back the Badge signs all over town. And I understand that, and I believe in the police. And I think the vast majority of police officers are heroes. They work hard. They do a good job. They have the best intentions. They sacrifice themselves for our community on a daily basis.
Okay.
But I'm not ignorant. I'm not blind to the fact that there are some mistakes. There are some folks that don't do a particularly good job. But they're not beyond saving. We can work with them. We can make this system better if we all work together, if we all communicate with one another. It's not happening right now. We need to make those changes.
What do you think are some of your characteristics that kind of make you a more outstanding candidate to vote for compared to your opponent?
I think the number one thing is I'm a proven winner.
Right.
Over the last 2 years as a prosecutor, I've won 12 jury trials. My opponent hasn't done a single jury trial during that period of time.
Okay.
Jury trials are the pinnacle of our work. They're the reason I'm a district attorney. They're the reason I go to court. I love them. They're what I live for. And I'm not afraid to try the toughest cases. I'm not going to plea bargain them away. I'm going to take them to trial. I'm going to put the violent offenders in prison where they belong. During that time, I have been the sole prosecutor who's put away somebody for first-degree intentional homicide, somebody who shot his girlfriend in the head and killed her.
Mm.
I've put away two folks who were child molesters, who were molesting young girls, and they're in prison. I've put away drug dealers who are dealing cocaine on our streets. I've put away drunk drivers. I've put away folks that are committing rape. In fact, I handled a case with the most prolific serial rapist that our community's ever seen, and that person's now in prison. So I'm not afraid to try the tough cases, and I've won them. And that separates me from my opponent because she doesn't have the trial experience that I have.
Okay.
She hasn't proven that she can win the tough cases like I have. And I think people, when they're voting for a district attorney, they want a fighter. They want somebody who's going to be in the courtroom fighting for justice and putting away the worst offenders, the most violent offenders. You know, you don't want somebody who sits at a desk pushing paper all day. Anybody can do that job. You want the top trial lawyer, the best fighter out there fighting for justice, fighting to make our community safer. So that's the number one thing that I think distinguishes me from my opponent. And I think that's what the community wants.
Yeah.
But I think we're also seeing with the current administration that there's this attitude that the rules don't apply to them. And this goes to my opponent as well. We've seen this in the campaign, for example. There have been some issues here on the campaign trail where she's not following the rules, you know. She was told she couldn't march in the 4th of July parade here in downtown Racine, and yet she was marching in her campaign shirt when she wasn't supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I walked the parade route on the sidelines. I didn't march in the parade.
Uh-huh.
I walked the parade route handing out stuff. I met a lot of people, thousands of people that day. We had a plane flying overhead with our banner. We made a lot of good contacts and talked to a lot of good people that day. But I knew that I wasn't allowed to march in that parade, and I didn't even try because I follow the rules. I follow the law. And the attitude with some folks is the rules don't apply to them.
Right.
And that's what I mean by justice with integrity. You're going to get a district attorney in Tom Binger who's going to follow the rules, who's going to stand up for justice, who's going to fight to make our community safer, who is not afraid to try the toughest cases and put away the most violent offenders. years. But on the flip side of the equation, I've got a lot of great ideas, a lot of new ideas on how we can change things here to make our system better, make it fairer, make it more accountable. And so, like I said earlier, we need to expand our diversion programs. We need to implement Vivitrol. There are things we can do that will help folks while making our system better, making it a lesser burden on taxpayers, and make our community safer. So that's the difference in this election.
Well, thank you so much. Listeners, again, that was Tom Binger, and he is running for the district attorney spot in Racine County. And he actually has some great ideas that are going to assist in making our criminal justice system a little bit more ethnically balanced and fair. So, listeners, again, voting is in November. Be educated, be wise, but get out and vote. Thank you.
You've been listening to Community Matters, a program that airs every Saturday morning at 11:15 on WGTD. For an online recording of today's show, log on to WGTD's website at WGTD.org, click Talk, and go to Community Matters. Your gateway to public radio is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
Support comes from Kenosha Harbor Market, presenting the first indoor market of the season at the Rohde Center for the Arts on 56th Street. New hours, 10 till 2. This week featuring Riverwood Produce. Bountiful fall produce includes carrots, broccoli, kale, and several types of squash. Mike also has a limited amount.